a production of South Dakota Public Broadcasting.
Ladies and gentlemen, this is the time and place for the South Dakota Public Utilities Commission meeting. It is May 21st, 2013, and it is 1 p.m. We are in room 413 in the Capitol Building of Pierce, South Dakota. My name is Gary Hansen. I'm conducting the meeting, and with me today on the via telephone, by the miracle of telephone, is Commissioner Chris Nelson.
I am here.
And Commissioner Christy Feagin.
Feagin is present. Thank you.
Wonderful. I'll check the phone list for then for anyone else who is joining us. Mr. Carney, are you with us?
Yes, Mr. Chairman. I am present.
Chris Kilpatrick.
Present, Mr. Chairman.
Mark Benton.
Present, Mr. Chairman.
Meredith Moore.
Present, Mr. Chairman.
Jason Topp.
Present, Mr. Chair.
Phil Schenkenberg.
Present as well.
Scott Swear.
Here.
Tom Welk.
Present.
Bill Hunt. Mr. Hunt, are you with us? If we're not hearing anything from Mr. Hunt presently, Mr. Mike Williams.
I'm here, Mr. Chairman.
Welcome to everyone. We have a number of folks in the audience with us today as well. We will begin today with the items on the agenda. The third item under telecommunications, TC 13030, will be moved to the end. That's just moving it one space, but there are some there's some confidential information on that that will be going off the web and off the telephones, except for those folks that are a part of that. So we will move that down to the end of the agenda. We'll begin today with approval of the minutes of the commission meetings held on May 7th that were prepared by Ms. Irving. Is there a motion to approve?
I would move to approve.
Thank you, Commissioner Nelson. Are there any additions, deletions, or corrections to the minutes? Hearing none, Commissioner Nelson?
Aye.
Commissioner Feagin?
Feagin votes aye.
Hansen votes aye. Motion carries. Consumer reports. The status of consumer reports will be brought to us today by Ms. Edwards.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Kristen Edwards from staff, filling in for Deb Gregg. The Commission received a total of 49 contacts since the last report was prepared for the May 7, 2013 Commission meeting. 7 of the contacts involved telecommunications services, 16 of the contacts involved electrical services, 2 contacts involved natural gas, 8 contacts involved cell phone service, 5 contacts were related to the Do Not Call registry, 1 contact was related to wind energy, and 10 contacts were related to issues not regulated by the PUC. 671 of the 704 complaints received in 2013 have been resolved.
Thank you. Any questions by the Commission? Hearing none, we will move to our docketed items, electric dockets EL 11-001, in the matter of the petition of Black Hills Power Incorporated to establish an environmental measures cost recovery tariff. The question before the Commission is, shall the Commission grant the joint motion for approval of the Third Amendment to settlement stipulation and approve the terms and stipulated conditions? The docket was reopened on staff's filing of a joint motion, and I'm assuming I'm turning to Ms. Kramer.
Thank you. This is Karen Kramer of staff, and Mr. Kilpatrick is also on the line. From staff's perspective, I would just say you may recall that on April 23rd, 2013, the Commission voted to accept statements A through R in work papers 1 through 4 as Black Hills Power's 2012 Annual Report of South Dakota Jurisdictional Financial Condition. At this time, the parties are requesting the Commission grant the joint motion to amend the stipulation to reflect that change. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Mr. Kilpatrick, do you have something to add?
No, Karen did a wonderful job. We agree.
Thank you. Any questions by the Commission? Is there a motion?
Mr. Chairman, in EL 11-001, move that the Commission approve and grant the joint motion of approval for the Third Amendment, the settlement stipulation, and approve the terms and conditions stipulated.
Thank you, Commissioner Feagin. Any discussion on the motion? Commissioner Nelson?
Aye.
Commissioner Feagin?
Egan votes aye.
Hansen votes aye. The motion carries. Docket EL-13-009 in the matter of the application of Black Hills Power Incorporated for approval of its environmental improvement adjustment. Questions before the commission, shall the commission assess a filing fee in the amount of $50,000 to account for actual expenses incurred in review of this filing commencing from the filing date? And secondly, shall the commission approve the 2013 environmental improved adjustment? Ms. Kramer, are you first up on this one as well? Ms. Melhoff.
Thank you. This is Brittany Melhoff for staff. On April 30th, 2013, Black Hills Power filed its annual environmental improvement adjustment. The company is not requesting cost recovery for any additional environmental improvements. Thus, staff's review consisted of verifying the year two revenue requirement, comparing actual cost to actual revenues, and carrying forward the true up to this year's rates, and verifying the revised rates incorporating the estimated year three revenue requirement. The company proposed to shift cost recovery of the environmental improvements from the EIA rider to base rates in docket EL-12061. Therefore, the revenue requirement associated with the 2013 to 2014 EIA rates only recovers the WIODAC environmental improvement costs for the period of April 1, 2013 through June 15, 2013. Staff and the company have agreed to use the ROE proposed in the filing for purposes of determining the rates to be effective June 1, 2013, with the condition that this ROE be revised next year to reflect the ROE determined as a result of either a settlement or a commission decision in the company's pending rate case. Staff recommends that pursuant to SDCL 49-1A-8, the commission assess a filing fee of up to $50,000 to account for actual expenses incurred in review of this filing commencing from the filing date. Staff further recommends the commission approve the 2013 environmental improvement adjustment and the associated tariff sheet as filed in the company's application dated April 30, 2013, with the condition that the ROE be revised next year during the true-up of the third-year revenue requirement to reflect the ROE determined as a result of either a settlement or a commission decision in docket EL-12061. Staff also recommends the commission approve the revised cost adjustment summary tariff sheet, section number 3C, 9th revised sheet number 11, cancels 8th revised sheet number 11. The company will submit this sheet as a compliance filing to reflect the EIA rates approved today, as well as the ECA rates effective June 1st, 2013. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Melhoff. Mr. Kilpatrick.
Thank you. And we also agree with staff in adjusting the ROE as determined in EL-12061 and to allow that to be trued up in the next filing. And we also agree with the revised cost adjustment tariff sheet and to have those rates effective June 1st, 2013. Thank you.
Thank you. Are there any questions by the commissioners?
One question, Mr. Chairman.
Please go ahead, Commissioner Nelson.
For Mr. Kilpatrick, when I first read this on the filing fee request, it almost looked to me like this was an after-the-fact imposition of a filing fee, but my guess is that's simply because of how quickly this has moved along. And I guess my question is, do you have any objection to the filing fee?
No, we do not.
Thank you.
Any further questions? Is there a motion?
I would move in EL-13-009 that the commission assess a filing fee in the amount of $50,000 to account for actual expenses incurred in review of this filing commencing from the filing date, and the commission approve the 2013 environmental improvement adjustment with the provisions outlined by staff today.
Thank you very much. There are two motions there. There's one motion covering both topics. And are there any questions on that motion? It's a perfectly legit motion. I didn't mean to infer that it wasn't. I just wanted to make certain that everyone understood that it's all being done in one motion, both questions. If there are no questions, Commissioner Nelson?
Aye.
Commissioner Fegan?
Fegan votes aye.
Hansen votes aye. The motion carries. Next item on our agenda is under telecommunications. It is docket TC11-087 in the matter of the application of Native American Telecom LLC for a certificate of authority to provide inter-exchange telecommunications services and local exchange services in South Dakota. The question before the commission is, today shall the commission grant the motions to suspend the May 8, 2013 due date for intervener testimony? And a second question is, shall the commission grant Sprint's second motion to compel and enforce prior commission order against NAT? In regards to yes, I thought someone might be entering to speak already. Sprint, Mr. Schenkenberg.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This is Phil Schenkenberg on behalf of Sprint. Would you like me to address both motions, the suspension motion or the motion to compel?
Since there's a number of items that can be discussed on each of them, let's stick to the first question, and then we'll move to the second one.
And the first question is the motion with respect to the procedural schedule, I believe. Correct.
Suspending the May 8th, 2013 due date.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the commission. This is a very, we thought, straightforward request. We did have a procedural schedule this commission entered in January. There were a number of dates. We had discovery. We had dates for NAT to supplement its testimony, given that there's been a passage of time with the appeal that took place last year. There wasn't any testimony filed by NAT. And so we got to the date on which Sprint and other interveners would have an obligation to file supplemental rebuttal testimony. And there really wasn't anything to rebut. And NAT had advised the parties that it intended to file a new application or a revised application. So rather than go through the discovery that we had received from NAT and file supplemental rebuttal testimony, given that NAT appeared to be changing course and hadn't supplemented its own testimony, we just wanted to make sure we were not going to be disadvantaged by letting NAT do whatever it intends to do in this docket and then respond. I don't believe Mr. Swear has responded to this motion, so I don't know whether he has an objection to this. We haven't. We don't concede that NAT should be allowed to revise its application. We would reserve the right to move to dismiss for lack of prosecution if we decide that's appropriate, but we just don't want to be disadvantaged by not having met this deadline under the circumstances, and we believe we have the support of other interveners. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Coit?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman, commissioners, and staff. SDTA and Midstate also have filed a motion for suspension of the May 8th deadline for intervener testimony. We could have easily just submitted support for the Sprint motion, but felt we should put in our own motion since our situation is a bit different in that NAT entered into a stipulation with both Midstate and SDTA a while back, confining the geographic scope of its application for certification. So we, as well as Sprint, were concerned about being disadvantaged as a result of the fact that NAT did not submit testimony on April 8th in accord with the procedural schedule. We do not know at this point whether the existing stipulation that we have is still going to be respected by NAT, given the fact that we haven't seen any testimony from them, and also based on the statements made regarding their possible amendment or revision to their application. With all of that, we just felt that we needed to protect our interest, and we filed a motion to suspend. And for the same reasons as Sprint, we would ask the commission to grant the motion.
Thank you, Mr. Coit. Mr. Van Camp.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Bill Van Camp, appearing on behalf of AT&T. I would echo the comments of Sprint, SDTA, and Midstate. AT&T also does not want to be find itself in a position of being disadvantaged because of the lack of filing in this case according to the procedural schedule. We also, for the record, would join CenturyLink in its request that either the commission schedule a hearing in this matter or AT&T, or NAT, I'm sorry, needs to withdraw its application at this point. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Van Camp. Ms. Moore?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Meredith Moore appearing on behalf of Mid-State Communications. I would concur in the comments that Mr. Coit made earlier on behalf of both SDPA and Mid-State Communications, and we would respectfully request that the Commission grant our request for an extension. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Swear.
Mr. Chair, we have no objection. NAT, I have been told, intends to file their amended application after the Memorial Day weekend, so I've been told that that application is going to be filed sometime between May 28th and May 31st of 2013. I would guess application is filed, that there will be an amended procedural.
Excuse me.
Oh, we certainly have no objection.
Mr. Swear?
Yes.
We're having just a little bit of a challenge here with the court reporters trying to keep up, and perhaps you're speaking a little too fast, and it's hard to hear some of what you're saying. So,
yeah, Mr. Swear, this is Sherry. A word or two cut out, and I just want to make sure I get it all. So you had said, so I've been told that application is going to be filed sometime between May 28th and May 31st of 2013. I would guess the application, and then I lost you there.
I would guess that the revised application will result in an amended procedural schedule, but we certainly have no objection to suspending the current schedule as Sprint has requested.
Thank you, Mr. Swear. Are there any questions from, excuse me? Did I miss someone?
Yes, you missed CenturyLink,
well,
Mr. Chairman.
All right, I'm going to slap the back of my hand, but please go right ahead.
This is Tom. Yes, this is Tom Welk, Mr. Chairman, on behalf of CenturyLink. And I hear an echoing. Is that just me?
I'm not hearing one.
I won't reiterate what other counsel have said, and especially in view of the comments made by Mr. Swear about the agreement to the suspension motion, but the perspective of CenturyLink is this case has languished long enough, and I think that the commission needs to assert in a scheduling order that if an amended application is not filed by a certain date, that it be deemed withdrawn. We need to move on and to schedule a hearing on this and with a revised schedule or either dismiss the docket. We've all expended, all the companies involved, including NAT, have expended a lot of time and money, and we've also the staff and the commission, and we simply want some firm direction by the commission based on the allegations and assertions of Mr. Swear. It seems to me what the commission needs to do, if you don't file it by such and such a day, that the docket is closed. If it is, we have a new revised schedule, and we would like a hearing date so this matter can be concluded. Thank you.
Thank you. I believe we have staff that's involved with this.
Thank you. This is Karen Kramer of staff. Staff would recommend the commission grant the motions to suspend the due date for intervener testimony.
Thank you very much. Commission members, do you have any questions? Is there a motion on the first item? Hearing none.
This is Commissioner Nelson. I would move that the commission suspend the May 8th, 2013 due date for intervener testimony.
Thank you. Discussion on the motion?
I would simply say I think it's evident why we need to do this. So far as setting an absolute deadline for NAT to file a revised application, I'm not prepared to do that at this time, but I will also say if it doesn't happen in the time frame that Mr. Schwer has outlined, that we have meetings in early June, that those kinds of things can happen quickly.
Thank you. Any further discussion?
Mr. Chairman, will the advisor's attorney, Rolaine Weiss, get involved in the procedural schedule so we can kind of get help in moving this forward?
Ms. Weiss is here, and she'll answer the question.
Yes, I could meet with the parties and try to set up a new procedural schedule.
Great. Thank you.
Thank you. And I think we're all a bit frustrated with the duration of some of the dockets that we're confronted with, and especially ones that seem to require a lot of what we might consider redundancy or the amount of time that it takes to get through them. And we're all very excited to resolve properly the dockets that are before us. With that, I will ask for a vote on Commissioner Nelson's motion. Commissioner Nelson?
Aye.
Commissioner Feagin?
Feagin votes aye.
Hansen votes aye. The motion carries. That brings us to the second question on this docket, which is, shall the commission grant Sprint's second motion to compel and enforce prior commission order against NAT? I'm sometimes at a loss when I have this many folks to turn to. I'd like to turn to staff first.
Sprint.
I get to turn to Sprint again first. Sprint, Mr. Schenkenberg.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the commission. Phil Schenkenberg for Sprint again. Sprint has moved for an order compelling NAT to respond to two discovery requests. These requests were served at the beginning of 2011. And the commission ordered NAT to respond to them about a year ago. We were here in April on our first motion to compel, and the commission decided that the questions were designed to allow Sprint to test the validity of the application and the accurateness of the statements that NAT had made, and designed to allow Sprint to obtain evidence that NAT is a sham entity. There was a stay following or during the appeal, and then in January, as I indicated earlier, there was a new procedural order that would have NAT responding to all of those requests in January. There were a number of issues that we had with what NAT provided in January. Those got narrowed down to two requests, and we had to move to compel in April with this docket moving forward. Just before 11 a.m. today, I did receive some supplemental responses from Mr. Swear, and I've had a chance to initially look at those and speak briefly with my client, but haven't had a chance to fully digest those and understand whether they are fully responsive. Let me just start with interrogatory number 9, which is the second one we addressed in our brief. We had asked for information regarding the surcharges and assessments that NAT was collecting and remitting relative to the provision of service to both free conferencing and to individuals and businesses on the reservation. That was relevant to help us examine whether NAT was legitimately providing or trying to provide local exchange service as it relates to collection of things like 911 assessments and telephone relay assessments. I think we have received information in response to number 9 that does answer the question. There was an attachment that was a Universal Service administrative company filing, and I just haven't had a chance to go back and confirm everything. Is what it appears to be. And so I guess what I'd ask on number 9 is that the commission note that NAT has provided supplementation that Sprint at this point hasn't identified in the short period of time and any deficiencies with that, but that if we do decide that what was provided at 11 o'clock this morning isn't responsive, that we be given a chance to come back and explain why, if we can't work that out with Mr. Swear. So that's, I guess, the limited request on number 9. Number 7 asked for coverage maps to test the statement in NAT's application that they currently had the ability to serve throughout the reservation. There is a requirement in the rules that if you're serving in a rural area, you have to demonstrate that you can serve or that you've got a build-out plan that'll get you there. And NAT says they can serve today, and we are very concerned that this is a sham entity using the provision of local service as a cover for the true business operations. And if, in fact, they don't have the ability to serve throughout and don't intend to, that would tend to prove our suspicion. We haven't yet received a coverage map. We've received an address that we're told is where either one tower is or more than one tower is. I'm not sure. But we haven't received a coverage map, and coverage maps are pretty commonly submitted in these kinds of proceedings to demonstrate capability to serve. So we think we should get a coverage
Mr. Schenkenberg?
Yes.
I missed a word there. And coverage maps are pretty commonly submitted in these kinds of proceedings to
demonstrate ability to serve. Finally, what we had received in January was a 2009 vendor document that appeared to be a proposal their vendor had made as to what this would look like once it was put up and constructed. And that might give us an indication of intent to serve and ability to serve, and could be real helpful, except that what was provided was a scanned-in copy that really wasn't legible and you couldn't read. And so we just asked for a copy we could read, and we didn't even get that. So we think we ought to get a coverage map. We think we ought to get a readable version of that prior map that had been provided, and we ought to get that promptly. Finally, I won't belabor this, but we did make a request for fees. It's authorized by the statute. You've ordered them to provide this once. We don't think we should have had to be here. And we think we ought to be allowed to make an application for fees and have those paid for by NAT. Thank you very much.
Thank you. I was debating whether to have interveners next or whether to have NAT. If I have NAT, then I will need to let NAT respond to interveners. I'll go to Mr. Swear and then go to interveners.
Thank you. First, regarding interrogatory number 9, we did inform Sprint that those particular items were being updated, and we were waiting for a professional audit of those USAC and various tax and surcharge items so that we can make sure that the information we provided was audited accurately. I finally got that information from NAT's provider last night and forward these on to Mr. Schenkenberg and the other counsel earlier this morning. So hopefully we've complied with that, but I did inform Sprint that we were waiting for those audited items, which, again, I did receive last night. Regarding interrogatory number 7, Sprint has known since the beginning when the application was filed that the address for NAT and its equipment was in Fort Thompson. So we think that they have had that information. Secondly, we are trying to get a coverage map from the vendor. NAT does not have a coverage map in-house, so we are actually trying to get a hold of our vendor to get that coverage map, and I'm hoping to have that yet today. Regarding the map that we provided earlier in the supplemental discovery, that would be NAT's response to interrogatory number 7. That is the copy that we have. That's the best copy that we have. It's the best copy that we can provide to Sprint and the interveners. I guess I don't know what else NAT can possibly do besides provide the exact document that we've been provided. And because of that, I don't think attorney fees would be proper here. Again, we've been sharing with Sprint some of the difficulties we've had in trying to get this information. Hopefully now we have the problem taken care of. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Swear. Are there any interveners who wish to speak at this time? Either in presence or on the telephone. If not, I will turn to staff. Ms. Kramer, do you have anything?
Thank you. This is Karen Kramer of staff. As to interrogatory 9, I would agree with Mr. Schenkenberg. He'll have to review it and see if that meets their needs. The coverage map, the other last week staff suggested at a minimum NAT could get a colored pencil and fill it in. There seems as though they could probably get that coverage map. Maybe there'll be one coming today. It would be helpful for everyone to have that. Thank you.
Thank you. Are there any questions by the commission?
Mr. Chairman?
Mr. Nelson? Commissioner Nelson?
One question for Mr. Schenkenberg. On interrogatory number 7, if they literally do not have a current map, do you still believe they're required to provide it to you?
Thank you, Commissioner. That's the first I've heard of this. I haven't been told, to my knowledge, by Mr. Swear in the 5 months I've been communicating with him on this, that was the only version they had. So if that's all they have and that's all that's within their control, then that's all they can provide to me. If it's a simple matter of asking the vendor to provide the original of that proposal, to me that's within their control.
Okay, I believe in their filing on May 15th they made the contention that they did not have a current coverage map in their possession.
And I understood that to be a different from, and maybe I misunderstood your question. If they have, I do think it would be appropriate to order them to provide a current coverage map, even if they don't have one. That's commonly done. It certainly has been done, I think, in all of the wireless applications that were done for eligible telecommunications carrier status, where that's a key question. Can you serve the area in which you seek to be designated?
And I don't disagree that that's a question we're going to have to wrestle with, but if NAT literally doesn't have the map, then that is part of the answer to that question. And so based on your response, let me go to Mr. Schwer. Understanding that you literally do not have a current map, do you believe that you're required to provide one?
I don't under the rules. However, what I'm going to do is I'm going to get a hold of some type of map to provide. I'm just going to do it. I don't think I'm required under the rules, but I want to do it because I don't want this to be an issue that's in controversy.
And by when can you provide that?
I'm hoping to be able to provide it by tomorrow by noon.
Thank you. No further questions.
Thank you, Commissioner Nelson. Any further questions by the commissioners?
Mr. Chairman, just a quick question with Mr. Swear.
Please, Commissioner Fegan.
The commissioner, of course, was not informed about the 11 a.m. supplemental information on number 9, but if we did have that, could you not submit work papers that you gave your auditors so that you would have had some information to give the interveners and et cetera?
If I may, Commissioner Fegan, I believe my client's position on that was they want to provide the correct and accurate information, and that's why they wanted to wait until they got an actual audited copy of that material. So I think that was their position that they took, that they want to provide everybody with accurate information, and we were waiting for the vendor to do that for us.
Okay, thank you. I thought it said in the testimony that I read that you just didn't have any information, and so I was just assuming you would have work papers, and so I might have read that wrong. Thank you.
Mr. Swear, who conducted the audit?
It was Technologies Management, Inc., out of Maitland. It's Maitland, Florida.
Thank you. Ms. Weiss, do you have a question?
Yes, I had a question for Mr. Schenkenberg. With respect to interrogatory 9, then are you requesting that the commission take any action on that? I believe you mentioned that you just wanted the opportunity to come back and see if anything further needed to be done after you had more of a chance to review the supplemental responses that were filed this morning.
Ms. Weiss, whatever makes the most sense. I don't think I'm asking for any affirmative action on that. Again, I just wanted to make sure that if we look at this and we don't have what we thought we should have been provided, that we have the opportunity to work that out and then come back.
And then going on to interrogatory 7, to the extent that NET provides the coverage map, are you still looking for affirmative action from the commission on interrogatory 7?
There were two questions open on 7. One is the current coverage map, and one is the better version of the vendor map from 2009, and I think I confused the two when I was responding to Commissioner Nelson. If he does provide a current coverage map, that obviously is the most important. If he does have available to him through a vendor the 2009 map that he had previously provided in discovery, we do think we ought to get that in legible form. If that's not available and isn't in his control, then I don't think you can order him to provide it.
And so based on that, is there anything for the commission to do with respect to interrogatory 9?
As I understand the way this is...
I mean 7.
7, correct. This is gone. I think he ought to be... NAT ought to be ordered to provide the original readable 2009 map if it's in NAT's possession or control, and maybe it's not, and should be ordered to provide a coverage map, which it intends to do tomorrow.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. Any further questions from commissioners at this time? If not, is there a motion?
Mr. Chairman?
Commissioner Nelson?
I would move that the commission grant Sprint's second motion to compel as it relates to interrogatory number 7, and understanding we have two issues here regarding the 2009 information. If, in fact, NAT has in its possession or can obtain a clear version of that and provide it, I believe we should compel that to happen. And secondly, a current coverage map, if they have that in their possession, we should compel that to be provided also.
Thank you. Any discussion on the motion? Commissioner Nelson?
Aye.
Commissioner Fegan?
Fegan votes aye.
Hansen votes aye. The motion carries. Are there any other questions before the commission on this item?
I believe the commission, and I would recommend that the commission deny the request for attorney's fees.
Any questions by the commission on that item?
I would make that a motion that we deny attorney's fees at this point.
Discussion on the motion? Commissioner Nelson?
Aye.
Commissioner Fegan?
Fegan votes aye.
Hansen votes aye. Motion carries. I believe that concludes all of the items on that docket at this time. Next docket before the commission is TC-12-189 in the matter of the petition of WiMAX Communications Corporation for designation as an eligible telecommunications carrier. The question before the commission is, shall the commission grant WiMAX's request to withdraw its petition for designation as an ETC? Is there anyone representing WiMAX? I'll turn to staff. Ms. Edwards?
Thank you, Kristen Edwards, for staff. Staff has no objection to the request to withdraw.
Thank you. Any questions from the commissioners? Is there a motion?
Mr. Chairman, in TC-12-189, move that the commission grant WiMAX request to withdraw the petition for designation as an eligible telecommunication carrier.
Thank you. Discussion on the motion? Commissioner Nelson?
Aye.
Commissioner Fegan?
Fegan votes aye.
Hansen votes aye. Motion carries. The next item on our agenda is TC 13-037 in the matter of the approval of an intercarrier compensation bill and keep amendment to an interconnection agreement between Cellco Partnership, Cellular Incorporated, Newark Corporation, Cellular Incorporated Financial Corporation, Midwest Wireless Communications, LLC, Rural Cellular Corporation, Verizon Wireless, LLC, WWC Holding Company, Inc., all doing business as Verizon Wireless, and Tritel Communications, Incorporated. The question before the commission is, shall the commission approve the amendment to the interconnection agreement?
Good afternoon. Margo Northrup on behalf of Triotel. We are requesting approval of this amendment with the interconnection agreement with Verizon. This is similar to an amendment that has been filed on behalf of many other rural local exchange carriers, and there isn't any changes to the specific agreement. I think it just got delayed behind some of the other filings.
Thank you, Ms. Northrup. With all of the parties on this item, is there anyone wishing to address the commission at this time other than staff? Then I will turn to staff. Ms. Kramer.
Thank you. This is Karen Kramer of staff. The amendment was properly filed, properly executed, and does not appear to contain discriminatory provisions. No comments were filed. Staff recommends the commission approve the amendment to the interconnection agreement.
Thank you. Are there any questions by the commissioners? Is there a motion? I will move in TC 13-037 that the commission approve the amendment to the interconnection agreement. Any questions, any discussion on the motion? Commissioner Nelson?
Aye.
Commissioner Feagin?
Feagin votes aye.
Hansen votes aye. The motion carries. The next item before the commission is TC 13-030 in the matter of the filing of approval of a service performance amendment to an interconnection agreement between Quest Corporation, doing business as CenturyLink, and DishNet Wireline, LLC, formerly known as Liberty Bell, LLC. The question before the commission is, shall the commission approve the amendment to the interconnection agreement? There is potential for confidential information to be discussed as we go through this docket. If we do, we will have to turn off the web and commit our telephone lines to only those persons who are a party to this docket, as well as the same for within the chambers here. The first party, Ms. Kramer, are you first up on this one? I don't think you are, but
Ms. Wiest had a number of questions last time, and CenturyLink and filed a document. So I don't know if you want to just start with her questions or go to one of the parties. You might want to check to see if Mr. Hunt has joined us also.
Mr. Hunt, as informed, is on the line.
Yes, I am. Thank you.
Welcome. Ms. Wiest, did you want to reiterate any of your questions?
In order to ask questions based on what Quest has filed as confidential, I believe the commission will have to close the session because I have questions that specifically relate to the confidential material.
All right. Thank you much. We will turn to confidential information, go into executive session because it would only be the commissioners. What do we call it now? In camera? We'll turn to in camera then. It's not what I would call it either. We're turning off the web then. Excuse me. Anyone who is on the phone now, we will be checking the telephone, and anyone who is on the phone presently who is not a party to or signed a confidentiality agreement for this docket should get off of the telephone line. Appreciate that.
At your hearing a week or two ago, I had a conflicting commission meeting in Minnesota, and we thought we would be able to cover this in both places, but clearly the commission had questions that we weren't able to answer in the hearing room, and so I apologize for that. This is an amendment that arises because of a unique situation due to the manner in which Dishnet does business, and it involves a confidential agreement as well as the interconnection agreement amendment that is before the commission. And because of the manner in which they do business, what happens is there are orders that are placed as resold orders pursuant to the amendment, and then those are then a different order is placed pursuant to the other agreement. And as a result, there are a whole bunch of new installations that happen. And and I've got Mike Williams with me here today as well. Mike is our expert on performance assurance plans and can answer commission questions related to that. But what we discovered and Dishnet discovered, which was an unintended consequence of this arrangement, was that this anomaly was occurring, not due to poor performance on the part of CenturyLink, but because this unique arrangement resulted in a high percentage of new orders being placed and counted in these performance metrics. And when you do a new installation, it's always the case that there are going to be more troubles that arise from new installations as opposed to existing plant. And the manner in which the measurement happens under the performance assurance plan is it's a parity measure. And so if we're providing outstanding performance, which the numbers indicate that we are, for customers in general, and you compare that to numbers associated with new installations, it doesn't take very many misses, you know, many issues to arise in connection with those new installations so that you have a statistically significant difference between those results. And so we approached Dishnet about this issue, had discussions with them. Both sides agreed that this wasn't what the parties were intending to do, and we entered into this interconnection agreement amendment in order to allow, in order to address this problem, and the agreement was to exclude these orders from the performance assurance plan measurements and the payments between the companies. And so that's what we're attempting to accomplish by virtue of this, and that's the reason for the amendment.
Thank you. Someone, perhaps that's the music that's in the background. Some of it's coming through.
This is Bill Hunt. Jason's summary is correct. And maybe just to put a little finer point on it, what happens is when we sign up our customers, we sign them up as resale customers. We keep them for 90 days, and then at the end of the 90 days, we convert them over to the UDP replacement platform and using Unis. That conversion is what creates the orders, and there's always, you know, issues that come over, as Jason said, with every new installation when you do that conversion. So this was not something that we had anticipated, a problem that would be created when we did the deal with CenturyLink. So we were more than happy to resolve this.
Thank you. I've been informed we can go off of into confidential information at this time. We have the proper number of phone lines, and they're all accounted for. So if there are any questions regarding confidentiality, we can simply go off the web at that time.
Okay.
Thank you. I didn't mean to interrupt. It sounded as if you had concluded your remarks, Mr. Hunt. Is that correct?
Yes, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Is there anyone else that to address the commission on this issue at this time. Any questions by staff? Seeing none. Questions by commissioners? Hearing none. Is there? I'm inclined to defer action on this item. We still have 90 days to approve the negotiated agreement. I'd like to take it under advisement. Is there any discussion by the other commissioners? Any concern about deferring it?
Yeah. Mr. Chairman, I would support your inclination.
In that, I will.
Mr. Chairman, this is Bill Hunt. Is there a specific question or a concern or something we can try to address, or?
I'm not implying that we need to go the full 90 day, or to the full duration to examine this. That's just there's considerable amount of information here to look over, and I have some confidential information I wish to discuss with staff on it.
Okay.
I will move to defer this. I don't want to defer to a specific time. I'm looking at the next commission meeting. Is that enough time for the other commissioners? I'm being advised by, I can't say my best advisor because I have all of them here, that we leave it open-ended. So I'll move to defer this item, item TC-13-030.
Mr. Chairman, just for a procedural question, does that mean that there will the commission still needs to vote at a meeting on it, or will there be, if this is deferred, will there be some other form of approval?
We'll simply defer this, the questions on this item until it is placed on a future agenda.
And, okay, thank you.
And that will not be a long duration.
Okay, thank you.
On that motion to defer, is there any discussion? Commissioner Nelson?
Aye.
Commissioner Fegan?
Fegan votes aye.
Hansen votes aye. The motion carries. Items, I believe that concludes the dockets that are on our agenda. Announcements, the PUC offices will be closed Monday, May 27, in observance of Memorial Day. The next regularly scheduled commission meeting will be Tuesday, June 4th at 9:30. Commissioners and staff will attend the Mid-American Regulatory Conference annual meeting June 8 through 12, 2013. Commission meetings are scheduled for June 18 and July 2nd. That concludes our agenda. Is there a motion to adjourn?
So moved.
All those in favor of adjournment will signify by saying yes. Those opposed, no. Commissioner Nelson?
Aye.
Commissioner Fegan?
Yes.
Hansen votes yes. The motion carries. We are adjourned.